Hello, I'm Alec Hogg, and this is Your Rational Perspective. I spent most of the morning listening to Adrian Gore give a presentation to investment analysts on the half-year results for Discovery to the end of December. The share price of Discovery has come under a lot of pressure when the trading update told us that the operating profit for the half year was going to be lower than it was in the comparable period the year before. The share price is now sitting at around 107 Rand a share, and it's instructive to note that Discovery broke through 100 Rand a share in 2014. So in effect, what you're buying today is the same price that you could have got Discovery in 2014. What has happened in the 6 years since to this effective multinational today is chalk and cheese. But that's the way Mr. Market is valuing it at the moment. I think very differently, and even more so after listening to the results presentation today and then having this conversation with Adrian Gore, which follows. Just by way of context, though, the problem child in the group for this six-month period, and in fact it's going to be for the full year, is Vitality Life Insurance. It's the insurance arm of the UK operation. The UK operation until recently was run by two different units, the Vitality Health unit run by Neville Kupovitz and the Vitality Life Insurance arm, which was run by Herschel Meyers, who was also looking after the South African arm. So he had a lot on his plate. He's recently retired due to ill health, and we wish him well after the incredible job that he's done in building up the life arm. However, those two operations now on Herschel's retirement have been pulled into a single operation, and that company under Neville Kupovitz, as you'll hear later in the interview, is starting to unlock quite a lot of value, as you might imagine would happen in when you have two separate silos, if you like, who are now coordinating together. The key thing about all of this is that Vitality Life Insurance, the laggard on the results for the six-month period, the profit number that it brought into the group is a technical term, if you like. It's an accounting loss that was achieved. It's not a cash loss. It is a revaluation of the business on a mark-to-market basis due to historically low interest rates in the UK. Someone like Warren Buffett would look at this and say, well, show me the money. Is there any difference to the money? Mm-mm. So what are we getting so excited about? Of course, Mr. Market thinks very differently. And as a result of that, we have the Discovery share price down at levels that last were seen in 2014. Have a listen to the interview that I did with Adrian Gore, the founder and chief executive of Discovery. I did ask Adrian if there were parallels between Discovery's experience in China with Ping An and Naspers' experience in China with Tencent. Ping An have gone from nowhere to 10 billion RMB or 25 billion rands in premium income in a very short period of time, and the managers are now aiming for 100 billion in premium income. So what Tencent has done for Naspers shareholders, who knows? Ping An could be doing for Discovery shareholders into the future. But don't take my word for it. Have a listen to this discussion and make up your own mind. This morning, Adrian, you had a packed audience, which is not always the case with investment presentations or presentations to the community. I was impressed by your presentation, but of course there was the problem about Vitality UK. Afterwards, the analysts always get hold of the CEO. What was their reaction like?
Alec, I think it was, I think it wasn't unwarranted. Firstly, I think we didn't communicate our interest rate position clearly enough, so I think that rattled them. I think the actual real hit in the UK from interest rates is fairly well understood. In other words, it's formulaic, and I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue was the experience variances. In other words, some operating performance wasn't up to scratch, frankly, and we're not pleased with it at all. So it's not a complicated discussion. I mean, I think that's not a good performance, frankly. We've got to fix it.
So if you take the UK life operations out of the results, what would you have delivered today?
I think the operating profit would have grown quite substantially despite building the bank organically. And I think that's quite an achievement. And I think if you look at the achievement of our team, I think if you look at the established businesses across the board. They did remarkably well. I think their growth was 14% without Vitality Life. So it really was a strong performance in a fairly complex environment. Vitality Life really did damage it somewhat. It's not fair altogether because interest rates are an external thing. And in fact, not dodging accountability, simply making the point it's a valuation loss. You know, this is not an operating loss where you have cash flow. So, you know, it is formulaic, but it is what it is. We've got to deal with it. But I was very pleased with the performance outside of Vitality Life. Mm. Really was.
So if you mark to market, as you have to do because of the accounting laws, then what happened in the UK really made it a disappointing result. Have you learned anything from this? Could you have done anything different?
No, I don't think so. I think that we're not a trading company, so I don't think we should be taking position on assets. You know, I think it's maybe our communication should be better. As I say, I think the only thing in this entire stack of results, the only thing, I think it's the best we've done in that regard, the only thing that concerned me were lapses in the UK. It was a £6 million swing, which is material in the life of Vitality Life, but in the group it's fairly immaterial. But just making the point, I think it's the only thing. So in retrospect, I don't know, there's always a burning platform, you know. The bigger you get, that's how it is. But we're very happy, I have to say.
Mm. Well, you did go into some detail on how the UK is a different market. Lots of upfront commissions for the salespeople. Hence, in tough times, they might be inclined to encourage clients to give up the policy on one point and take it somewhere else. Is there much you can do about that, though, given the environment?
I think there is. I mean, I think firstly, you're dealing on the margin. You know, it's not a commentary on all brokers. On the margin is enough to create variances. I think there is more we can do. I think that there's what they call commission clawback terms. In other words, you claw back commission within a period. I think we've been too lenient on that. I think we've got very high-level brokers that are doing well, but I think we're working with certain sectors that are not ideal. So I think there is a tighter management process that I think might have avoided this. So I do think that this is manageable. Our team has worked hard. They've done some really good stuff, so I don't mean to undermine them, but I do think we can do better.
The UK now, before we move off on to happier climates, the UK is now under one roof with Neville Kupovits looking after the whole shop. Have you seen any impact of that yet?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's done the most incredible job with Vitality Health. I tried to show him the presentation. I don't think it came out well, but he's already put in place a dramatic plan around the capital structure. He's collapsed a number of divisions into each other, so he believes he'll reduce the run rate. He's done a number of things already on the lap side around the data evaluation. So him and the team, the life team as well, have moved really quickly. So, I mean, we have to see how this plays out, but I think we're very, very impressed with his leadership. He's quite a unique leader, I have to say.
Adrian, just to close off on this, when you spoke in the presentation about the full year's impact of Vitality Life in the UK, the numbers look pretty substantial. Is that going to push your operating profit into the negatives for the year as a whole, as a group?
Well, it won't push the profit into a negative, it will push the growth into a negative. Yes, it will. I mean, the interest rate effect of the year is like £45 million. So it's just the formula effect of plugging in that interest rate into the same formula, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Just brings down, you know, and I hope it's conservative, we try our best to just illustrate, assuming experience variances continue at the same rate, you know, so in the presentation we try to give a sense of what it could be, and I think we should assume that. We're already 8 months into the year, you know. I think the good thing, Alec, is that once you've taken that hit for the interest rates, it's not recurring. In other words, it's a capitalized value. So, you know, once you've readjusted your rate, thereafter the profit emerges again. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how these things work.
From a broader perspective, though, the shared value model, which we've watched for many years now, does seem to be catching on globally. And we'll talk about Ping An in just a moment in China. But here in South Africa, are you seeing that the shared value model, does it gather momentum? Obviously, there's some benefits from Discovery Bank, but in the more established businesses?
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, I think in all the areas, it's quite remarkable. Anywhere where we see a bit of slippage, we haven't done the model well enough. You know, even in the UK, I think there's the areas, it's actually the whole life book It's a flat whole life book. It's not linked to Vitality at all. It's a back book that creates an interest rate problem. The shared value model really has proven to be very resilient. I think the entire, it's a hard question to answer, maybe I'm too close, but I think about the South African business, our entire mindset in product development, you know, integrating the bank, etc., all of it is about the Vitality behavioral model and how you create that shared value. So it's so integral to everything we do. You know, I'm not sure I can answer it accurately of what it would be without it, but it has proven to be really, really good. And I was trying to show this morning, if you look at the Discovery Life product set, people are really using it. You know what I mean? It's a living thing. It's not a transactional product that you pay premiums and your beneficiaries get a claim on death. It really is something that people are involved in. You know, so I think it's been a really, really powerful thing. And then, you know, the point again, I didn't do it very articulately, but this, the world of where capitalism is going, the shared value idea of kind of doing good by being more competitive. You know, we have such a fantastic model. You know, we have to scale it.
That was an interesting point. Maybe you could just go through that again, in that capitalism has gone from, I think you said it's going towards, well, you're in stage four and we're in stage three at the moment. But stage one was the business of business is business and shareholders come first, etc. But for most people, yeah, they've forgotten that. The path thereafter?
Well, the path, I think, was towards CSR, where companies accepted that charity is something you give, but then it's allocated to a separate department. You give X percent of your income. It doesn't scale at all. It's a grudge kind of thing. But, of course, it's a good thing to do. And then you went to, we're now in ESG, which is a very good thing. Obviously, it's broader, but it still adds to the cost of doing business. And it's still, I think, in the boardroom, not an easy thing to do. Whereas I think the best model must be that if the business model of an organization authentically is competitive and profitable by doing good, if you can achieve that, you know, that must be the ultimate. You scale, you do it aggressively because it's good for you, and you change society. So this, you know, this is a concept of Michael Porter's shared value. It really is something that I think is very powerful. And I don't own the morality around it, because to be fair, I think that our business is naturally aligned to our customers. I think it's something we spotted. If people are healthier, they're more profitable for us. So, you know, it's actually at the core of our being, you know, to an extent. But I do think the phase of capitalism is changing. I think the pressure on purpose and the pressure on companies being forces for good is becoming overwhelming now. And I think unless you're authentically doing it, funds will not flow to you. That's what we're seeing.
Are you seeing other companies also adopting this concept?
In our industry, I think many, many companies are adopting the concept. I'm not convinced about the intellectual arguments about shared value, but I was in the boardroom with one of our big partners, and I gave that exact same slide. And after the presentation, one of the ExCo members came to me and said he was really moved, because they've got a company that's hundreds of years old, and that's been at the core of changing society. So everywhere we go, it resonates. But I think tactically on the ground in the insurance industry, there's no doubt that behavior aspects and pricing them in is where companies are trying to go. So we do have a considerable lead here. And I don't think it's unassailable, but that's why we're pushing hard to scale.
And that really is the point. When Amazon went into the cloud, into web services, it had a 7-year lead. And today, the whole business is built on the profits that they make from it. How much runway or how much time do you feel you have before the inevitable phasing in from competitors?
I don't know. I mean, I think the partnership model is profitable, as I think you might have seen. It's not material enough. And I think if we can get those partners to be transformational through this, if we transform their businesses with them in a positive way, I think that may give us real competitive advantage. That is a real moat because of their scale and, you know, the kind of all the stuff that comes with it. But I don't know the answer to that. I think that we've got much more work to do in creating materiality around this global vitality model. And I think that's where I think we have to go to avoid the competitive forces that may come.
I don't know if I heard you correctly, but when you mentioned John Hancock, your US partner, that it was highlighted in the results of its parent company, and that the message that came through was that half, well, this is what I heard, that half of the new business policies that they were writing were actually aligned or linked to the Vitality Stroke Discovery platform. Did I hear it right?
Yes. John Hancock now has Vitality in everything they sell. So they have what they call an all-in policy. Now, every life insurance policy you buy from John Hancock has Vitality. It could be a light or heavy. So the light is just more just conceptual. It's there and you use it. The heavy is really where it should be. The data I showed this morning was that the integrated policies that are sold properly with John Hancock have grown by 80%, and that makes up half of their life insurance sales. So the effect in their total sales has been quite significant. And I think at the Manulife life level, my understanding is that in the results call, this was cited as an important issue. So I mean, it is pretty substantial. You know, I mean, we're doing well out of it, and we're very grateful. But they're on fire with it. I mean, they live and breathe this stuff. It's quite remarkable.
Just going back, because in the Discovery story, one of the big missteps that you made was when you went into the US and you lost a lot of money there. Obviously, you've learned from that experience.
There's no doubt we have, but I mean, it doesn't immunize you from mistakes altogether. You know what I mean? I think we have learned from that experience. One thing I think we did learn is the power of partnerships. I think these markets are complicated, and I think if you completely and totally alone, even in the UK, the initial partnership with the Pru was predicated on, you know, having that kind of big brother who really has a local context. So it has worked for us. It really has worked for us. I think you're right. I think those lessons did come from the US. We wouldn't be here today with a global footprint, I think, without that experience.
And the partnership in the US with Apple Watch. You just touched on it. I think you were running out of time in your presentation. But surely that's a game changer.
It could be. It could be. I mean, they see an opportunity to, you know, we brought this idea of funding the watch through behavior change. And we've done it in a few markets with them, and they saw a broader opportunity to do this with potentially health insurers in the US, like they did with Aetna. And now they're working with just other partners, like there are a few that are in a pilot at the moment. I'm not sure I can divulge their names. Really fantastic companies that they've done with Orange Theory, and others will follow around exactly this idea that those partners want to have people aligned to them and happy to pay for behavior change. So. You know, we're trying to develop almost an engagement mechanism around the Apple Watch that they can use in a generic sense. So it's piloting out there. It could be substantial over time. It's very, very interesting, but I think it will take a bit of time. They're proving to be a very good partner, really.
How many watches have you sold through your networks?
Oh, I should know. I don't know offhand. I mean, the UK alone, I think we've done 100,000.
You've got to be one of their biggest partners then. I know Apple's a huge company, but that's a significant number of Apple Watches.
Yeah, no, it is significant. And I think, you know, we've got more to do with our partners in Asia over time. So it does have great potential.
Do you get to talk to Tim Cook, or are you ushered into the boardroom now when you go to Apple?
No, where this original deal was done, and the idea was the CEO, Jeff Williams, Tim's number 2RC. I kind of pitched him the idea of, could we bend mortality curves with the watch? You know, they really are impressive guys. You know, they were very taken by the social ability to do this. And then we did the study in London last year, in the RAND study, with them, and you know, we've done a lot of good stuff. It's been in their C-suite. It hasn't been a local deal, you know, which I think is important.
Adrian, China, Ping An, that is just an extraordinary story. When you released some of the data today, 400% growth. It's just crazy numbers. But I guess when you talk about China, the exponentiality in that market is extreme. How did you get in the first place?
Almost by luck. The Vitality model in those days, the Pru was intrigued by it. And in fact, Ping An, I'm not sure how they came to us, we were also intrigued by it. We went to see them, and they were at that stage, when this company was growing so quickly, this is probably early part of the century. You know, they were relatively still big, but a small company that was pretty basic, you know. So we had those discussions, and then it hardened over time they wanted to build a health insurer, and that's how we got there. I think we're very, very fortunate, and it's been a very good partnership. Good partnership.
Are there parallels with Naspers and Tencent?
I have to say, I think that's, I mean, I'm optimistic of what of how we could scale this thing, but I think that that would be really a blue sky, a blue sky permutation. But look, there's no doubt, I showed in the presentation, if you look at how their PNC and their life company have grown over the years, health can be as big, if not bigger. Sorry, not our health company, I'm saying healthcare spend is bigger than this stuff.
Mm.
And so there's no doubt if we can achieve that kind of growth single-minded, we could achieve that, there's no doubt. But I do think Ping An Health will be a very, very big company. And trying to make the point, when we see 25 billion rand of premium or 10 billion RMB of premium, for us it looks like a kind of an end in itself. You know, in their world, that's pretty small. So we are, you know, we've agreed with them explicitly that we're not chasing profit. We're trying to, and if you look at that analysis of spend on OPEX, it is like 70-80% growth related. So, you know, it really could be very, very big. And I think we've been long-term partners. It's a long journey.
It's hard as a South African to get your head around an ecosystem that you have there of more than 30 million people, 16 million of which are already customers of this partnership of yours. But the thing that kind of blew me away, and I think I had to really reflect on and try and understand it, is that the target that the Ping An team are putting in, or their line in the sand for the future, is just, again, mind-blowing. They're already at 10 billion RMB, or as you say, 25 billion rand. And that target of tenfold, a 10x from there, how long do they think it's going to take to get there?
When you have compound growth of those levels, you know, you get strange, like it's like relativity, you know, funny things happen. When we saw that, the 10 billion number, we thought that was going to be hard to do. It doesn't mean the other one will be achieved, but I think 40% growth will get you there. I mean, it compounds quickly.
When you look at these international markets and then you come back home, and at the moment your profits are generated here at home primarily, and I guess we'll add in the UK in a normal year, do you get frustrated by operating in a small market, or are there big advantages to being here in South Africa?
I think you know, the bank for us is very exciting, because the bank potentially could be a very, very big business. You know, if you look at the size of our banks, they're not small by any standard. So to an extent, I think the expansion process of the organization, especially in something like banking, provides a massively complex opportunity, and at the same time, one that I think can really be of considerable scale by any standard. So, I mean, the market, you know, if you look at Discovery Health and Discovery Life, they're very big in their markets, and therefore I think the ability to grow ridiculously is limited. But at the same time, I think that if you look at Discovery Bank, if we get it right, I think it could be very substantial. And therefore, I don't think the size of the market really presents that sense of limitation. I'd also, Alec, I tried this morning again, I'm not sure if that's clear, but try to illustrate how integrated the organization is. So there isn't a sense that we're stuck in any one market. You know, the stuff is floating around all over the place.
Mm. With the bank itself, and maybe that's where the shared value model kind of resonates quite easily for people looking at it from the outside. You explained that if the depositor or the borrower, in other words, your customer, benefits, they get to share in the additional growth that gets, or the additional profits that get generated for you by it. So you give up part of those profits back to the customer. And is it getting traction yet?
There's no doubt. I mean, I think it's been a message you're battling to get out there. We're very, very happy with the bank progress. I mean, we're not trying to get skinny accounts across a wide range. You know, we're trying to get our ecosystem to move onto the bank. 180,000 accounts out of 80,000 customers that are really using it. Reading is very good in 6 months. And the data, I mean, what I showed this morning was actual data. These are early correlations and they may change, but it really is a very compelling 6 months. And I think your point is right. That, you know, if you get people to get value as they engage, better. But for us, we are agnostic. I mean, that's the perfect shared value. You know, in the life insurance analogy, we've learned this over time. If your embedded value is flat by status, but the value for the client grows by engagement, then you've got proper shared value. You know, so those kind of algorithms we've learned with our partners, if we can apply that to the bank and get that to work, super powerful, I think.
And you also talk about the composite model here in South Africa, where you've got the health, the life, the Discovery Insure insurance for your vehicle, and of course now the bank coming through as well. Is it part of your long-term goal to take that composite model into the global arena?
Yes, it is. It is. And I don't think I think we're talking to partners already about using the chassis as, it could be different partners. In other words, if you look at the traditional bank assurance model, you've got the insurer and the bank on a sales kind of on a JV around the sales outcome. You know, we're trying to argue for a composite where vitality and the behavioral stuff sits under both, and that's where the joining is. In other words, the client gets added value from both entities. You know, so the composite structure is something I think we can deal with outside the country. I don't think it happens in the same entity. They're just too big, you know.
Mm.
I don't think you can own all of the verticals.
Just to close off with, Adrian, there was quite a lot of philosophy in your presentation today, which is great because it lets one understand. But you were looking at shared value at a time when capitalism was very much in the first block. In other words, the business of business is business. What opened your eyes to it?
Frankly, we kind of broke through this idea of trying to make people healthier because of the uniqueness of the South African healthcare system. I think that obsession or that purpose of making people healthier created a purpose-built company. I think we had Michael Porter out for our summit, and he explained this whole shared value world and how you can't scale CSR. And I think we can suddenly have this epiphany that, in fact, our system is shared value. It's a kind of a perfect example. So the thing evolved from, it was purpose built from the start, and I'm proud of the idea that, you know, as a team we kind of were doing it when others weren't, but I think it evolved over time and we found ourselves in the front of this purpose led shared value world. So it has been an evolution. It hasn't been just an epiphany, so to speak.
And how long has it taken for that to evolve? And during that period, did you ever lose faith?
No. In fact, I mean, listen, the you know, Walt Disney had the idea of make people healthy, happier.
Mm-hmm.
At the start of Discovery, I think, we kind of said, well, ours is make people healthier, you know. And I think that we never lost faith in that. I think that has always been a battle cry that has resonated so well and guided us. But the shared value came in and we started to see how everything fitted together. You know, you would know this. I mean, these profound structures, if they work, they tend to answer every issue well. You know what I'm trying to say to you? They kind of fit in everywhere. It just works out that way. So a profound, simple idea just kind of evolves through its common sense. And I think that's what we found. Fascinating evolution.